We've been sitting here together since Saturday night, practicing meditation together. We started the retreat by everybody gave expression to their aspiration as to why they were here. In the shamanic tradition, you know, when you step over into sacred space, before you do that, you announce your name to the universe. You know, statement of intent, I am here. Important thing to do. When we're on the edge of something, coming into the space of a retreat, it's a very intentional space. The power of the heart, the power of the mind, the power of human aspiration transforms even physical space. So we're in the temple now. Built from the fabric of our aspiration. And it's a stepping out of privacy. We've been talking a bit about, you know, the sense of being a private person, and sort of elaborating on that more fully, not just the privacy you have when you go to the loo or whatever, but the sense of withdrawal from life itself, life force itself, presence. The collapse of energy and attention. The simple emotional recoiling from what we feel to be what is the case, what is true. Now, what you actually can, in this ordinary moment, acknowledge is the truth, if you had to. But then the recoil from that. It's a usual movement, it's a usual mechanism to do that. And the power of stepping into the intentional space of a retreat is that we are now committing to animate something else. We're not going to animate the recoil. We're going to bring ourselves forward into life, make ourselves available to life, feel the quality of relatedness to this moment that is always already the case. You've always known it. We stop running. Just stop running from anything, yourself, life, this moment. We stop sticking our head, you know, like an ostrich into the ground. Or the mechanical habits that we've developed in our life to just anaesthetize ourselves constantly, just dull ourselves, distract ourselves, fragment ourselves, deaden ourselves, dream ourselves, all of that. We don't practice any of that here now. One of the hardest things is actually to just walk right away from words. And it's almost like the last taboo. And in some ways, I had an experience this afternoon. For me personally, it's like turning off my computer. You know, I don't know, any of you guys probably, being so pure as you are, are not into computers, but I find my computer quite addictive, and it very much stimulates my mind. When I turn it off, it's just sort of like there's a silence. That's it, no more of that. And meditation is like a meta kind of turning off. Actually, it's okay to walk away from words, to turn away from words. It can seem outrageous, and I know that even though we're 5 days into this retreat, I perceive some of you are still very much involved with words, as if they're important, as if somehow you want to get too far away from them. That we've got to keep checking in with our rational mind, intellect. Are you sure what's going on here? And you've got this figured out, and let's think this through a bit. And one of the things about meditation practice is that as we begin to relax with ourselves, we actually drop down into silent knowledge. And we need to be able to also let go of the need to know. There's a really hilarious moment in a movie called Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, where these two English guys who are like, criminals are having a sort of an interview with this kind of London sort of mega criminal, and he's sort of seeing whether they're up for a robbery, and they're asking all kinds of questions, and he gets very irritated with them, and in the end they conclude that he said, they wanted to know a lot of information about it. He didn't want to divulge that, and he said, "Oh, this is like a James Bond movie, is it? It's just on a need to know basis." So meditation practice is on a not need to know basis. You don't need to know. It's a very, very difficult thing, isn't it, to let go of this addiction we have to thinking that we need to know, but the knowing is in a particular compartment of our being where English happens rampantly. Patterns of English happen, and our privileging of that is astonishing. As if you can't fit some part of yourself or the universe into that zone, then somehow you've got a real problem. But you don't. You don't. It's quite okay to wander away from the noise of English, just wander away from it and move into other domains of your being, feeling domains, silent knowledge domains. And when you come back, your intellect, which of course is chronically curious, says, "Tell me all about it then," and you say, "Sorry, that wasn't for you. That wasn't for you." The intellect kicks up a real fuss, doesn't it? But surely you've got to give it to me on my own terms. You see? Silence. It sort of packs a bit of a sad, doesn't it? And sort of kicks up a fuss and drags us around a bit. I'll teach you silent knowledge, eh? We'll do a few loop the loops, because the mind gets very upset if it can't understand something, doesn't it? It starts spinning and part of it. So we've been also keeping silent here. We've been keeping silent all week, which is very functional. Silence of nature, the silence of sitting still. The silence is like a blanket we wrap around ourselves. It soothes us, doesn't it, from this hyperactive cognitive mind with all of its demands, but none of its answers. Is that the mind, the thinking mind, has lots of questions, but it doesn't have any answers. And even if you give it an answer, It doesn't say thank you very much. Ah, it doesn't stop for a moment, does it? Just comes up with the next question and the next one, the next one. Quite mechanical in that sense. Uncertain of itself, always in doubt, dilemma. So I've been pointing out that meditation doesn't we don't doesn't make its way on the basis of that configuration in our being. It doesn't deny it either. But actually, we're deepening into ourselves now, which I described as mere mysterious presence. Because when we let go of the patterning of the mind, which of course creates a world, isn't it? That the pattern of the rational mind actually talks to itself, doesn't it? That the mind talks to itself and it talks itself into an apparent reality, an apparent world, which, seems really real. However, if you just relax away from that, that world of past, future, memory, dreams, all of that, you just relax out of that, then we plop down into already awake presence. Isn't it? It's a sort of suddenly we're stone cold sober. Oh, crikey, crikey dick. I'm here. I thought I was somewhere else, but I'm not. This is getting really interesting now. I'm here. Maybe our initial tendency is to want to make a description out of this. This new thing we've discovered. But see, because of the cumulative effect of our practice, which is quieten down, relax, quieten the mind. Focus your attention. When attention gets really focused, we drop out of the internal dialogue. We call it samadhi. When attention really converges in the moment, we drop out of the internal dialogue. It's a mechanism of meditation practice. It works. It works. You have to practice it, though. From just where you are. From just exactly where you are. When we have this experience of arriving in the present moment or presence, not only a new point of view opens up, but also something happens to us energetically. And as I was sort of almost, well, kind of struggling to point out, to us today, we are we are alive. Sometimes I scratch my head about the insane positions that I seem to get myself into, but I don't know. Why is it that I'm needing to remind everybody that we are alive? But it seemed to be useful at the time. We are alive, and this is an energetic experience we're having here. This is not theoretical, is it? We're not just, going through the motions. Well, I was with a group a while ago, and someone said that they recognized that they'd sort of that they'd backed themselves into such a corner in their minds that they almost kind of felt that this was a dummy run that they were having. They weren't really alive. It's quite a shock, isn't it? When we sort of wake up alive, we recognize, ah, I'm alive. I'm really alive. I'm not somewhere else. There's some profound energetic experience occurring here, and I'm not alone with it. It's everywhere, it's in all directions, this great uprising of the life force. This great unstoppable life force. Rising up through us, up the spine, giving the brightness and the luminosity of the awake state to us. natural awakening. It's been described as natural awakening. It's easy to say, of course, you know, easy to say, there it is, you know, just that, that's it. No big deal, it's just like the sun comes up in the morning. It's not, there's nothing inherently problematic about any of this. You know, that would be a good TUI advert, wouldn't it? You know, there's nothing inherently problematic about this. Yeah, right. You know, so then we get into the yeah, right bit. Because even though it's simple to say, when we actually truly enter into this experience, all kinds of stuff starts happening, doesn't it? All kinds of stuff starts happening within the body, mind, all the rest of it. And that can be a bewildering experience for novice meditators particularly. Generally speaking, they think that whatever's happening shouldn't be happening. It's obviously not right. I mean, it's out of control. Interpret it, you know, as proof of the fact that I'm a bad person, or that I've got it all wrong, or that I can't do this, I'm not getting it right. And if you're able to just hang in there for long enough with yourself, it's a great demand, isn't it? Just, well, you know, really, you don't have anywhere else to go anyway. You know, really, when you get to this point, you could withdraw, you could throw in the towel at any point, but, you know, it's getting too interesting, isn't it, to do that, really? Yeah, it is very, very interesting. Something's urging us on in this process. We're on to something, and we know it, don't we? If we were to, the heart's confession, we're on to something here. Your mind might not understand it, but the heart doesn't normally have a problem with this process at all. It suddenly like starts to wake up. It gets very, very happy, in fact. I'm always astonished that I can just sit here in meditation and feel so, so deeply happy. I think, I feel so happy. It's bewildering to the mind. Well, you're not doing anything. You're not doing anything to make yourself happy. It doesn't make sense. You're not getting anything. I'm not doing all the things I normally like. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. You know, and the mind gets into doubt. What do you mean? You can't really be. The heart's just. I've spoken to everybody in the room now, and you've all, in various ways, or most of you at least, have confessed something along these lines. Actually, I loved what you said, Evan, today, if you don't mind me quoting you. Evan just said, I belong here. I just feel like I belong here. That's it. It's the simplest expression, isn't it, to say. If we add a whole lot of thought, then, you know, it's a bit strange, isn't it? It makes sense of this. But, you know, but that sense of the content heart. And then there's all the rest of it. It seems that when we make ourselves available to life, the practice I've been encouraging is feel where you are. Authentically persist in feeling where you are, persist in presence, already awake, persist in being awake. It's as much an emotional gesture as it is an act of concentration, and also your body must consent to this process. It must cooperate with this process too, otherwise you won't even make it into the meditation room. So it's important that the body is also on board with this. energy level will tend to be, let's say, another way of saying it is, when we practice in this way, the body, mind, and the psyche is potentized by the force of life itself, or spirit force is potentized. And so we experience heightened energy, heightened awareness quite naturally. It may have been happening so slowly here for you that you don't realize that. You just think, oh, I just feel normal. Just wait till you get out of here. But you probably it's like a very, very slow acid trip. You know, it's happening so slow you don't notice that your conscious is changing. It's very, very slow, you know, but sure. One of the reasons for that is because we're no longer squandering energy and attention into animating the self-habit, self-concern. A huge amount of our energy gets siphoned off and wasted, if you like, in sitting here just thinking about everything. You think about, like, worry, for instance, is a tremendously enervating habit, isn't it? It wears us down and rewards us with nothing. There's nothing, this is of no benefit. It's a very poor investment of energy and attention, is worry. That's a gross example. You can see that really clearly. But actually, even just subtly, self-concern. In the shamanic tradition, there's one teaching about, like, doing an energy audit. Just recognize you're an energetic being. And what is it that you do that promotes energy, enhances energy? And what is it that you do that causes your energy to go right down, to become flattened? And the ancient shamans concluded that the number one cause of flattening of energy is self-importance, from the personal point of view, because self-importance just is like a V8. It just guzzles. It's a big gas guzzler, basically. You know, it just guzzles a lot of gas. So when we stop animating self-importance, or at least, you know, start to orientate ourselves away from it, then suddenly we find we've got more energy on board. The body-mind is potentized. We suddenly feel more alive. You might feel like you just got your life back, actually. If you've been sort of, you know, mechanically living a half-life out there, suddenly you think, I got my life back. You look out, like, oh, look at that. The trees all look beautiful. We're seeing things like for the first time. Everything's radiant in its natural state. Nothing's changed, actually, out there. Your consciousness has changed. Yeah. You got more of it, actually. You got more consciousness. Only don't take it personally. Otherwise, the danger is when we collapse into self-importance again, into the hall of mirrors, endlessly thinking about ourselves. And you suddenly find the energy starts to go down. Suddenly we've got dilemmas, problems, not going so well. We think we've got something to solve. We haven't got anything to solve. The only thing to do is abandon that. Stop doing that. Stop practicing self-importance. That's the only thing you've got to solve. Nothing else. We persist in presence, well-being is magnified. More consciousness, more energy. And it potentizes our system, which means to say that it starts flushing out. You know, it's like a giant enema. It just starts flushing everything out from your chakras. Anywhere where, as I mentioned earlier, you've chronically arrested the life force. Because you've suddenly got more energy flowing through there, it starts to flush it out. In this process, we're not flushing it out of our backsides down the toilet, we're flushing it out through consciousness. This is the conscious process. You flush it out through consciousness. Consciousness is the great release valve. Which means to say that as you deepen into practice, you need to be able to sustain the container of consciousness itself and bear whatever it is that wishes to emerge through consciousness. I talked about this a couple of days ago, the commitment to bear presence requires some intestinal fortitude and all of the other spiritual virtues. All of the spiritual virtues and spiritual practices are designed, whether it's patience, energy, love, generosity, renunciation, clarity, these qualities, these are all things that we need to get going in ourselves now in order to sustain presence. Otherwise we phase out of it. Difficult feeling arises, we can't contain it. We can't allow it to release through consciousness. Things, you see, if you just keep relaxing, things will arise in consciousness and they leave us. They leave us. It's a marvelous thing. Anything, everything, your fears, your weakest weakness, your weakest weakness can arise, become fully conscious and flow out. You don't have to do anything, you have to bear the process. I truly believe that the universe comes to our assistance at this point. This might sound nuts or whatever, and I could certainly have no rational grounds for I can't make an argument for this. But I have an inherent sense that when I practice in this way, I feel supported. I feel safe. Part of me feels very safe. And the way that I would confess it is that I feel safe to die here. I feel safe to die here. It'd be okay to die. Not because I'm with you. I mean, it's great being with you, but it's not like, you know. Or, I'd love, you know, Tamarta is my dream place to die. I'm talking about my state. That's how safe I feel. Maybe I'm kidding myself. Maybe if somebody was holding a gun to my head right now, whether I'd say something else, but, you know. This is just what arises for me. I notice that when I wander, when I fall back into self-importance, that if I'm really straight with myself, I start to feel frightened. And the more I go into that, the more I fear death. I have no rational argument to offer you about this. It's just my experience, but it suggests there's a lot of implications in that for me. There's some guiding forces, or you could call them laws if you like, and in the ancient world, most traditions would, most people would say that there are laws operating in this realm. There are laws operating within consciousness. It's a hard one, isn't it? Sometimes in our culture, because we talk about the law with a capital L, we just sort of think we just want to blow a raspberry at it. To hell with all that, thou shalt not, blah, 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 because it all seems like that. But if we're not careful, we throw the baby out with the bathwater and think, there's no laws. We do whatever. We're a culture of individuals after all. You make your own way here. The meditation process suggests otherwise. They're self-revealing. The Dharma is self-revealing. It's not a construction of the mind. It's a force in nature. It's the force of nature. And we are that. We just thought we were independent. Our thoughts suggested to us that we're independent. So, by this point, we're profoundly involved with ourselves, but not from a point of view of self-importance. I hope. And sense that all of you here are profoundly involved with yourselves right now and the emerging process that is occurring in your case moment by moment. Your mind, your thinking mind, may still have a story about this. How's it going for me? Because the thinking mind's constantly self-assessing, isn't it? Constantly self-assessing, judging. Am I getting it right? Is it getting better? Is this as good as the last retreat? What the f hell is Stephen talking about? Whatever, whatever. You see, you got that, but in the pulling out to one side, you've still got your real experience, what you're really experiencing, what is actually emerging for you here. The stream. In the Buddhist tradition, talk about entering the stream. We cross over into sacred space with intent. We enter into the stream of Dharma. Dharma being the law of the universe. We enter into that and we move with it. It moves us. Feeling the motions of it is marvelous. If you can get to the point where, just even for a single moment, rather than worrying about how it's all going, just to enjoy being carried, it's the delight of being. It's a delight. It makes us an ecstatic, liberating the life force, allowing the life force to move freely. It's such a relief, isn't it? It's such a relief on the one hand to allow this. And it's also a great demand, a great responsibility. Anything you swept under the carpet in the course of your life may emerge here, because that's what he wants to do. We practice welcoming things into the heart. You have to go looking for things. not to go looking for anything in meditation. Just relax and receive the emergent. Receive whatever it is that wishes to be conscious through you, emerging in your heart, in your body, in the world around you, in your thoughts. Welcome, if you can, just welcome the world as it comes and goes, arises and passes, mysteriously. As we deepen into the practice, you start to sense that no condition can undo you. That's why we're safe. That we're safe. No condition can undo you. It's the opposite. We just keep liberating all conditions through consciousness. The great paradox is that the more we relax with this process, the more we recognize it just happens by itself. It's self-liberating. But then we also have those moments I described as the Velcro moments, where somebody's like, this doesn't seem to want to liberate. this isn't releasing. You feel arrested life force. And normally a great story around that, personally. A great narrative, what wraps around that, where we're stuck. And we try and come up with all kinds of strategies as to figure it out, understand it, make it go away, heal it, release it, compare it, whatever, whatever. But I would say that if you find that a condition arises that suddenly feels stuck, then that condition is only begging for one thing. And that is relationship. That's all it wants. That's all it asks of you is, are you willing to offer that part of yourself or the universe or what might seem to be another person, but actually it's just a reflection in your own, in the great circle of your own consciousness. Are you willing to offer that relatedness, love, feel it? That's all it asks for. It doesn't ask for analysis. It doesn't ask for to be shot at with a missile or anything, just relationship. So then from this point of view, you say that meditation is the practice of offering relationship to the emergent. By the way, all of my descriptions about meditation are completely disposable. I hope none of you are writing any of them down. Because I wouldn't want you to build a house on any of them, you know, because if you think about it too much, it doesn't make sense. And, well, just a minute, you know, me offering a relationship to that, isn't that all very dualistic? And suddenly we've got a big problem on our hands. But from one point of view, we can talk about it like this. Offer relatedness to what's emerging, unconditionally, freely. Make room in your heart, but only for just what wants to emerge. You don't have to sort of go looking for it. If we think about it, we get overwhelmed. Oh, I couldn't possibly make room. Unconditional for everything in here. Because we don't have to. It's only just like, no, just make room in your heart for what's emerging in you now. Just that, just this much. Could be that the divine, you know, the higher mind, the higher intelligence that's operating here is just feeds you just what you're ready for now. Okay, now try this. Now, here's this bit now, you see. So sometimes when I sit in meditation, I just marvel at the timing of things. I've mentioned this before in retreats. The timing of things. See, from an ordinary point of view, there's nothing remarkable about that. In fact, normally we're at odds with time, aren't we? We don't even seem to have enough of it. I used to live in Wellington. I'm outside of it now. People talk about being time poor and haven't got enough time for everything. Certainly haven't got enough time to meditate, that's for sure. But when we do this, our whole relationship with time changes. Suddenly synchronicities just the emerging pattern of the present moment. The moment you had that thought, you heard the tui and you smelt the food and somebody farted, and suddenly you start realizing there's a spontaneous co-arising here. And it's marvelous just to see the breaking edge of just the perfect timing. How, you know, again, from the collapsed independent point of view, the world is inherently a problem for me. Nothing arrives on time. Like, I know this, when I'm really going for pleasure, I want it now. I don't have to wait. Or, you know, want to get to the good bit, you know, the bit that suits me. But it so rarely happens. It's very frustrating. It's like, you know, road rage, isn't it? People sit there, you know, it's not going well. You know, they want to get to where they want to be. It's a kind of metaphor for it's a state, isn't it? It's a state. We don't just animate it. We're in the car. We're doing it all the time. You see some people, they look like they're just constantly irritated all the time because things are not going fast enough for them. You know, they haven't got time to listen to you. You get half a sentence out and they're already interrupting you, and then they go on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and they haven't never got enough time, and they're just getting more and more stressed. It's very common, actually, very, very common in urban environments for people to function in this way. It's a demonstration of unhappiness, isn't it? And yeah, it all seems very serious and meaningful, and they've got to get there. You know, it's the most important thing in the world. But from this point of view, we relax and suddenly we've got so much time, it's not funny. It's sitting here. How much time do you want? You sit. And so suddenly it all changes. We're not trying to get anywhere anymore. Which means we can notice where we are, perhaps for the first time. And then the timing of things is amazing. Just everything. Not just internally, but externally, just the timing, the perfect timing. And now. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing. This quality of astonishment, in some traditions they would call it awe. It's a beautiful spiritual emotion, awe. Naturally arises. It's just completely to be enjoyed. See? Because it arises from non-problematic consciousness. It's not like everything's a problem all of a sudden. It's just like marvelous. A marvelous display of the present moment. And the inner and the outer. There's a natural discipline to this practice. We've created a strong container here. Everyone's committed to it. Silence, stillness, walking, sitting. That's enough, really, in a way. But there's a great natural discipline, isn't there, to sustain this quality of relatedness, to persist in it. You notice, sometimes you want it, sometimes you don't. And you think, I just don't want to be aware in this. I just can't. Where's the back door? I just want to disappear into a book or into a cup of coffee, there's a discipline, isn't there? There's a demand. So we each of us, for ourselves, discover what it is that assists you in this process. Make use of disciplines on that basis.